Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Lewis Kincaid with the Runaround. It is Wednesday, February 3rd. I wanted that song to continue. It's such a beautiful song, The Romantic Warrior, by one of my all-time favorite groups, Return to Forever, Chick Corea, Stanley Clark, Al Di Meola, Lenny White. Beautiful song. And I was looking up some information that I was going to talk about today, and was regarding the Koch brothers. But I didn't find exactly what I was looking for. So since I didn't find exactly what I was looking for, I'm going to hold that off till tomorrow. But be sure, we will be talking about the Koch brothers and their everything that they bring to the political commentary these days with all of their money, all of their billions of dollars. It is, again, Wednesday, February 3rd. 2016, and some of the topics today, I had to get a topic from Fox News. It hurts sometimes to actually listen to them. In fact, I actually did not turn to the television channel, but I did see a video clip, and they were so concerned with one of their on-screen commentators, why so many black people vote Democratic. They didn't seem to understand. I think Fox News understands, but for their edification, I will be more than happy to talk about that today. I'm going to talk about Black Lives Matter because I know it's something that bothers some people. Why all lives matter? Why don't we talk about all lives? So we'll discuss that. I noticed last night that there is this television show that's going to be on for the next few weeks, and it is about the O.J. Simpson trial. Oh, my goodness. 20 years later. So let's take a walk back to the mid-1990s when that was the trial of the century, as they say. And what was it all about? And why did people cheer or become upset? I'll never forget the day that after the whole trial, the verdict was announced. I was on the set of 20th Century Fox, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes. I want to start with, and I have some other discussions today. I want to talk about Cam is getting hammered, and I knew he would. I think I mentioned it on this show. This is only the third day since I've restarted, but I knew he was going to get hammered on referring to himself as an African American quarterback last week. So that being the catnip for reporters, most of them who happen to be white. They just want to know. They want to know, what does it mean? Why did you bring it up? You know, what? And now, this week being the week that he is getting ready to play the most important game of his life, he tends to want to move on from that. And he's kind of backed off of it a little bit, which is knew was going to happen. You know, he spoke about it over the weekend, and he backed off of his original statement. But his first statement, and like I've written about, his first statement, I understood what you said the first time. I don't need you to have to say it 20, 30 times after. And even that first time, you were asked about it by someone about what it meant to be in the Super Bowl, and you brought up the fact they didn't ask you specifically the question, wasn't specifically African American. You brought that up, but you mentioned it, and it has taken on a life of its own. Now, every single reporter from every corner of the world wants to know, what were you when you were young? Were you a tree or were you African American? My goodness. So, I'll discuss that in a little bit. Why voting on president matters and other voting habits. I really, you know, if there's one thing that I'd want to talk about every single day that I do this show for the rest of the time, is the need to go out and vote. And because I vote a certain way doesn't mean that everyone else has to vote, period. I think it's just important to have more people involved in the process, because too many people get tuned out of it, or they don't care, or they don't think it matters. And I think it does. I think it does matter. That you vote. So I'm going to talk about why voting on the president matters and on all other voting habits. I'm going to continue to go on the daily news of right now, what's going on in politics, and that is the primaries and the caucuses. And who knew? Who knew already? Donald Trump. I thought it would happen that night, but it took him a day or two. Donald Trump really likes to do a lot of tweeting. So this morning he tweeted that Senator Ted Cruz, who won the Iowa caucuses, he said that Cruz cheated, and that's why he won. Now, I guess one of the things that happens a lot on Twitter is that people put things up, they write it, they put it up there, and everyone reads it, but then they take it down. I don't get the whole thing with taking it down. Like, I guess so many people will read it, and then you take it down, and you can act as though it was never there. They get screenshots of it. It's never going to leave. But it happens a lot. People write things on Twitter, then they take it down. Well, Trump said that Cruz cheated, and that's why he won Iowa. So the sore losing has started with Trump. What would happen on Monday night? I thought he would say, "You're fired. I hate you, Iowa. You're fired." But he didn't. He waited. He waited for a day, waited for about a day and a half, and now we find out he believes Ted Cruz cheated, and that's why he won. Well, I got some news for Donald Trump. He's getting ready to go into New Hampshire. New Hampshire primary is next week. It's not a caucus. It's just like most of us normally vote. You go into a voting booth. You're by yourself. You choose. You don't hear other people talking about another candidate. It's just you and the voting booth, and you pick. New Hampshire, those people in New Hampshire are very, very independent. They're not interested in a lot of, for lack of a better phrase, Bible thumping. So they're not interested in Ted Cruz coming up there and talking about God and country and I won because God said I would. They're not that type. They're a little more independent. Marco Rubio, who is about as thin as a piece of paper, doesn't have a lot of substance, looks good, looks the part, says a few quotes that he constantly repeats, but he doesn't have a lot of depth. He's not going to go over well. I think there's going to be a surprise winner next week in New Hampshire, but it's not going to be Donald Trump. I do not believe Donald Trump is going to win this next primary in New Hampshire, and that's going to bring up a whole big controversy come South Carolina, back down in the South. I think the favorite to win in South Carolina is one of the governors. One of the governors that did not do very well 2 days ago in Iowa, and I think it's going to be the governor from Ohio, John Kasich. I think it's going to be him. I honestly believe that John Kasich is going to win the New Hampshire primary. So we'll wait and see. That's my prediction. We'll see what happens. But let me get started with what I saw on Fox News, and doggone it, people. I try not to. Well, like I said, I did not actually watch Fox News. I probably only watch one program a week on Fox News, and that's the Sunday morning program with Chris Wallace. And I'll tend to listen to it on background. I'm not actually sitting in front of the television watching. It's just kind of hard to watch Fox News at times. Megyn Kelly seems to be relatively fair. O'Reilly is a joke. I used to watch him in the mid-2000s. I just stopped. I gave up. He just ridiculous. I would probably want to reach over the table and do something I'm not supposed to do. Greta Van Susteren, it's just their daily lineup is just Shepard Smith is a good guy, but I just don't take the time to normally watch. At any rate, this was Monday, and a lady was on, and she was mentioning why so many black folk vote Democratic, why they're and the word she used, why in terms of their devotion, why do they have slavish, slave-like devotion to vote Democratic. So let's go ahead and suss this out. Why do so many black people vote Democratic? First of all, I think when we look at the history of this country, first of all, black people didn't even get a chance to vote literally until the late 19th century, in the late 1800s. And even then, it was hard. Legally, it wasn't prescribed until mid-1900s. You had to go through poll taxes. You had to go in front of a board of people or a person, especially in the South, and they would show you a jar of marbles, and you'd have to guess how many marbles were in the jar. And if you didn't get the right answer, you wouldn't be able to vote. And then there was that anecdotal story of Oprah Winfrey, I believe, in The Butler. No, Selma. I'm sorry, Selma. When she wanted to go vote, and she answered some questions correctly, and then they wanted to know every county in the state. They wanted her to give the name of every single county in the state. She had to know it by heart, and she wasn't able to, and they denied her the vote. So the vote has a lot of people died for the right to vote. And for the fact that people now are asking questions, why do they vote Democratic? First of all, none of your business. It's a private vote. But let's go ahead and discuss this. For a long time in the late 1800s, obviously with Abraham Lincoln being president during the Civil War, and he being the person that was primarily responsible for freeing the slaves and ending slavery, you know, and then there's always some literature of whether he was truly about freeing the slaves or he just wanted to keep the Union together. What was his main focus? Bottom line is Abraham Lincoln was the chief architect in terms of having the slaves freed. So for a long time, black people voted as Republicans. And voted as Republicans into the 1900s. Teddy Roosevelt, early 1900s, voted against Woodrow Wilson in the 19-teens, into the 1920s, until FDR in 1932. And then you had a lot of people, black Americans who voted Democratic. But even then, it was still black people voted as Republicans on through the 1930s and 40s and 50s. And it's always been well known that Dr. Martin Luther King, his father, was a Republican. Jackie Robinson, the first black baseball player in the major leagues, Republican. So there's always been famous black people who did vote Republican, but one of the reasons why the change was for a long time in the South, Democrats were strong. Democratic Party was very strong in the South in the 1800s, in the early 1900s, and they were the pro-slavery party. Remember, Lincoln was Republican, so most of the Democrats in the South were in favor of slavery. So the Democratic Party was the pro-slavery party for a long time. Slavery ended, and you had segregation and you had Jim Crow laws, and the Democrats were still strong. Remember, now to the 1900s, 1950s, early 1960s, Dr. King coming around, George Wallace, governor of Alabama, Democrat. So Democrats were associated with the South for most of the history of this country. And remember, the Democratic Party has been around since early 18. What changed everything in terms of how people voted was President Johnson signing civil rights in 1965. And when Democratic presidents from Texas, from the South, signed civil rights in 1965, which most certainly gave black people a lot of different freedoms in regards to not only voting, but public accommodations, being able to go into restaurants, no more of black drinking fountain versus white drinking fountain, et cetera, all the different public accommodations that were supposed to be important. Being able to live where you wanted to live, although that has still been through the 60s, early 70s, was it didn't end in 1965, let's put it like that. But once he signed that bill for civil rights as a Democrat, the Southern Democrats left the party. They were angry at Johnson that he would sign that against their will, something that they didn't want. Northern Democrats were not pro-slavery. Northern Democrats like Kennedy, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, they were pro-African American rights in general. We know that John Kennedy, President Kennedy, wasn't absolutely for civil rights, and who's to know if he would have been able to sign the bill in 1965 like President Johnson did. Obviously, he lost his life in 1963, but he came around slowly to civil rights for African Americans. But once that was signed, once that bill was signed, many people, many political pundits at that time said the South will be lost to the Democrat for the next generation. And all those Southern Democrats moved to the Republican Party. Those people who were resistant to civil rights, who were resistant to equal rights for black people in the South, who were resistant to 10 years before, in the 1950s, Brown v. Board of Education having schools integrated. They left the Democratic Party and moved to the Republican Party. Now you have people like Newt Gingrich, Trent Lott. If you're not totally into politics, I'm going to throw out some names maybe people aren't real familiar with. Haley Barbour used to be chairman of the Republican National Committee during the Reagan era. Ronald Reagan himself was once a Democrat, moved to the Republican Party. A tremendous amount of Jesse Helms, Strom Thurmond. Strom Thurmond is a piece of cake in and of himself. That'll be a discussion for another day. But he was a Republican senator from South Carolina. At one time, he was a Democrat. He was upset with Harry Truman in 1948 for integrating the U.S. Army and ran against Harry Truman in 1948 for president as an independent, but essentially as a states' rights segregationist, won three states, all in the Deep South. I believe it was Mississippi, Alabama, and South Carolina. I think he won those three states, or could have been Georgia, maybe the third one. And Strom Thurmond had some skeletons in his closet that we didn't find out till after he passed away. Again, that he's a piece for another day. We'll leave him alone. At any rate, big picture, Democrats from the South in the 1960s moved to the Republican Party. And that party became, in time, through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, the intolerant party in terms of civil rights. That's just the easiest way to say it. It was no longer the Democratic Party who was as intolerant towards civil rights as the Republicans. The parties switched in terms of civil rights. And now it was the Republicans who've held that mantle proudly and quite clearly since the mid-60s. Now, why Fox News would seem to have a problem with understanding why black people continue to vote for Democrats, I don't understand. If Republican politicians like Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Marco Rubio, do the same thing you do when you talk to the people that normally vote for you, when you go in front of them. You advocate for positions that they feel comfortable with, to them about the things that you want to do for them. Well, I would say the same thing applies to black people. If you want their vote, then you go in front of them and talk to them about the things that you want for them. And if you think you have certain ideas that they may or may not go for, at least stand in front of them and talk to them. Have the courage to be disagreed with. I think Republican politicians too often are afraid to go in front of black people in groups, in churches, in restaurants, in meeting halls, the same places where you meet, town halls where you meet other people. Do the same thing with black folks or a mixed group of people. I'm here to tell you, though, most Republican voters out there, I don't think they really want a lot of black people in the party, because then politicians would have to cater to what they wanted. And it may not always be what most of the Republican, current Republican voters want. So I don't know if it's something really they talk about wanting to see the black people and more black people in the Republican Party, but only under their terms. And it doesn't always work like that. It's not that cute and simple. So that's the very basics why black folks don't vote for Republicans and why there are a minority of black people on Fox News. They get their commentators who are black. And in fact, this woman that spoke about black people not voting or having a slavish devotion to the Democratic Party happened to be black. So you can find, obviously, people who vote in the Republican Party. You can find the Herman Cains and the Dr. Carsons. And it's not hard to find them. You can find black Republicans, and there are families that are historically voted Republican and have not changed through the decades. Absolutely. You can find them all over in every state in this country. I know I have family members. I was going to say I'm sure of it. I know I have family members who vote Republican. So it's not about there are no black Republicans. It is that more often than not, the Republican Party makes no effort to have black people in their party. They don't go out of their way. Now, you can make the charge that Democrats always don't do things for or with the support of black people. You can make that charge, but I would say it comes down to what is the best of two evils. And I believe more often than not, especially with the current president, a person of the Democratic Party, President Obama, that the Democratic Party has been more amenable to black folks. Now, If we could have had Colin Powell run for president of the United States under the Republican banner, then we would see something different. His wife did not want him to run in mid-90s. This would have been 1996. Bill Clinton was running for re-election, And there was talk that maybe Colin Powell would run for the presidency. His wife was dead set against it. She was afraid he would be shot. And that tells you most of what you need to know about him being able to run. He would not have gotten there would have been sections of the Republican Party who would not have voted for Colin Powell, that would have voted for Bill Clinton, who normally would vote for a Republican if he would have run. It would have been a hard choice, because I think he is a person that has some common sense and that thinks through things. But it did not happen. So that's my answer. If Fox News ever wants to ask me, I'll be more than happy to give them the Cliff Notes version. It won't take me 15 minutes like I just did. I can break it down in less than 2 minutes. But there is a core reason why Southern Democrats from the Democratic Party in the South from the 1860s to the 1960s ran away once LBJ signed the Civil Rights legislation. They became part of the Republican Party. Jesse Helms, Strom Thurmond, Newt Gingrich, a whole lot of them. And Democrats took the black vote, and that's where it is. Why does Black Lives Matter? What's going on with this whole Black Lives movement? Black Lives started about 2 years ago, and it started with a group of ladies, I believe, in fact. And again, I know this that people have trouble talking about. They know, well, why don't all lives matter? All lives do matter. They absolutely do matter. The issue is, too many times, and I believe that this movement would not have been able to start if we did not have things called cell phones with cameras and video. Because all through the years, when there have been allegations that police officers have not done the right thing every single time, 99% of police, 98% of police officers do the right thing, and they're good people. But you got some out there that are not good, and that wouldn't mind in a group situation. And let me back up a second. I said 98%. I think sometimes there are police officers who would not do the wrong, the bad thing, the wrong thing. But in a group of police officers, get caught up and don't want to be called out for not aiding their fellow officer. So, there's this issue of most officers are good. Then you have another subset of that group that are good, but if they are in a group of officers that are causing problems or doing the wrong thing, they're not going to call out their fellow officer. They're going to let things slide. And obviously that causes problems too. There have been too many instances just in the last 3 or 4 years. I only have a short list. Errol Garner, the choking incident in New York City. Michael Brown in Ferguson. Mr. Scott in North Charleston, South Carolina, where the officer shot him and then planted the gun next to him. Sandra Blaine last year in Texas, and then being put into the jail cell and supposedly committing suicide. The gentleman in Cincinnati, who was on the University of Cincinnati campus and was shot. You're reaching for his license, and all of a sudden he was shot. And I know a few weeks ago there was a settlement in that case that the city of Cincinnati paid the family for the killing. There have been so many. I just gave you three or four. I could give you a list of 20 to 25. Black Lives Matter is important because for too long, until we saw this on video, there were people that didn't believe it. Just like I was speaking about Reverend Sharpton yesterday and supporting families who lost loved ones to police violence. People didn't believe that officers were doing this bad thing. Then we found out they were doing it. And then we find out that even after you see it, they don't get indicted. Or if they do, in the rare case, get indicted, they are never found, very rarely, found guilty. This is why Black Lives Matter is a movement. And it's a movement that has injected themselves into the politics of today. They've made Senator Bernie Sanders talk about it. They've certainly made Secretary Clinton discuss it. And what does she feel about it? I think there is a YouTube video of Secretary Clinton talking to a group, and they really challenged her. They pushed her. And I think she made some good points. And in fact, I believe the Black Lives Matter group was probably a little overbearing on her and wasn't listening to what she said. You know, you can't change things at the drop of a hat. I mean, that's where we are now. That the things that they want changed, which I agree with a lot of them, including some issues with how the police union is able to silence police in matters of shootings. In a lot of jurisdictions, a police officer can commit a shooting, a fatal shooting, and not have to say anything for up to a week, sometimes 2 weeks. That's what happened with Officer Wilson in Ferguson, Missouri. He didn't have to talk to anyone. And let me tell you, I'm cynical on this one, not conspiratorial, cynical. Those 2 weeks were time for him to get his story straight, period. I am one person that will never believe that Ferguson, Missouri issue happened as he said it happened. Don't believe it, won't believe it. And that DA McCullough, he's a prosecuting attorney that was so in the police union and that particular policeman's pocket, it was ridiculous. But getting back to Secretary Clinton, they were challenging her on her policies and specifically criticizing her because her husband, as president in the 90s, had so many policies that were actually that exacerbated putting people into jail, drugs. We've come to find out now over the years that sometimes why are people in jail for 5-10 years for crack cocaine when the same person who has powder cocaine gets probation or gets a year, if a year. So there are always disparities in terms of treatment of groups of people, most certainly overall in groups of Black people being tried and going to jail versus whites. Prison has become a industry for profit. Prisons are no longer part of the state governments or federal governments. They still are out there, but there are too many prisons now that are for-profit prisons, which means they need people in them. So it helps to have a ready supply of people coming in to the prison. And I'm not all about prisons for profit, but if you're going to have them, you better be prepared to have a loss, because if we're just going to put people in order to meet, for lack of a better word, quotas, then that prison doesn't need to be there. Black Lives Matter has a purpose, and it makes people uncomfortable. I get it. It is, I guess, what I've been talking about. My focus on this show is to discuss politics, sports, but so often race comes into the equation, in my opinion. And because this is my show, this is what I'll get to do. It makes people uncomfortable to talk about it, but talking about it does not mean necessarily. Now, in terms of Black Lives Matter, absolutely. There's some racist policies that are going on. When we talk about disparities in terms of jail time, most certainly now that we have seen this whole epidemic of heroin usage into the quote-unquote suburbs, we now have a different mindset about how we should treat people who are on heroin. We no longer want to throw them in jail automatically and forget about them and act like they're no longer people, because now there has been an epidemic of white people, young white people, who are taking heroin. 20, 30 years ago, it was in the inner city. It was black folks. It was brown folks. And people didn't care. Lock them up. Throw away the key. It's changed now. And heroin has unfortunately gotten into other communities. And people now don't want to see their loved ones thrown away into jail. They want to see them helped. Well, looky here. How about that? People have been asking about that for a long time, but now that it's hidden in another community, politicians are listening. And you hear the Republican politicians about it. We have to fix. We have to get more treatment facilities. Really? That's interesting. I hope those treatment facilities are all over because people need to get to them. So Black Lives Matter serves a purpose, and I hope that they are able to get some of the things that are injustices fixed, because it's horrible. The things that have gone on with officers who are doing the wrong thing. They need to get this fixed. And that's how I see it. Iowa caucuses, the politics of the week so far. I tell you, Donald Trump, he's a mess. You know, I knew he was going to come up with an excuse. I thought he was going to do it Monday night. But Monday night, he was almost classy. He didn't complain. He didn't say, you know, it was Iowa's fault. You're fired. He didn't get mad. He kept it classy. But he waited. He came out with the fact that Senator Ted Cruz, who won the Iowa caucuses, he's cheated. He cheated, and he won. You know, and it kind of brings up a situation too often happens with Republicans. Whenever they lose, there's something bad going on. You know, President Obama, then Senator Obama, won the election in 2008, and now all of a sudden we got to start restricting people from voting. There's illegal voting going on. Now you can't get a license. They close up the driver's license bureaus. You can vote with a gun license. If you're a hunter, you can vote with that license, but you can't use a school ID. Why is it when they lose they have to restrict voting, or say that people cheated? Why can't you just lose fair and square? It's crybabyism. This party, the Republican Party, the party of personal responsibility, they always go to the cheating, you've done me wrong card every single time. It's never, I lost this time. Congratulations. I lost. Now, I'll give Trump partial 5% credit. He did congratulate Cruz that night. But you know what? Take that compliment away, because now you said he cheated 2 days later. So forget that compliment. You're going back to the whole thing again. And speaking of Donald Trump, and speaking of the fact that he's not going to win New Hampshire either, I predict he's not going to win this next Tuesday in New Hampshire. It's going to be Governor John Kasich of Ohio. We know these last 6 months as he's run his campaign that he's gotten a lot of people who are behind him, a lot of people who believe we need to get our America back, or Murica, as I call it, M-U-R-I-C-A. I want our America back. He's also gotten a large group of, the best way to call them, Nazi supporters. People who believe in the right white race, and that we should all be separate, and that this country went wrong when it started allowing the mongrels, or black people and other people of color, to mix. That was the downfall of our nation. I wish we could give DNA tests to every person in this country so we could find out, and they could be public, and we could find out who some of these Nazi sympathizers really come from. Oh, would they be shocked? Oh, that would be nice. At any rate, Trump has a great deal of support from that organization. There's an organization called Stormfront. They're online. KKK, he's got them. He's got the supporters because they like his views on building that wall in Mexico. I'm not saying that Donald Trump is a member of the KKK, nor do I know for a fact that he is a Nazi sympathizer. I'm only saying for sure that they support him in running for president. And David Duke, who ran for president in the 1990s, Grand Dragon of the KKK, ran for governor of Louisiana, almost won it, was a state senator, I believe, from Louisiana, in Louisiana, believes that he is nothing like Trump. He says Trump is a extra David Duke. David Duke on steroids. So with that in mind, and this has come up, look at Donald Trump's father. Donald Trump's father is named Fred Trump. And there have been allegations that Fred Trump in his early youth, early 20s, was a definite Nazi sympathizer. There are reports that when he was 21, so this would be back in the late 1920s, Fred Trump, Donald's father, was involved in an altercation between the KKK and the police. And there was someone named Fred Trump who was arrested. Now, it cannot be pinned specifically on this particular Fred Trump, only that there was a Fred Trump in the group of people that were arrested. His father has been deceased since 1999, so we certainly can't ask him. Donald Trump will not come anywhere close to it. What we do know is that Fred Trump was a very successful real estate investor in the city of New York. We do know that in 1973, this is during Richard Nixon's era, the U.S. Justice Department, the Civil Rights Division, filed a civil rights suit against the Trump Organization, charging that it refused to rent to black people. Now, what happened is the Urban League sent black and white testers to Trump buildings and to apply for apartments. The whites got the apartments, the blacks didn't. And according to the court records, rental agents reported that applications sent to the central office for acceptance or rejection were coded by race. This is the father's real estate organization. There was a 1979 Village Voice article quoting a rental agent who said Trump instructed him, this is Fred Trump, not to rent to black people and to encourage existing black tenants to leave. This is the father of Donald Trump. The Justice Department subsequently complained that continuing racially discriminatory conduct by Trump agents has occurred with such frequency that it has created a substantial impediment to the full enjoyment of equal opportunity. That is the record for Fred Trump. Now, does his son know this record? Sure, the son knows the record. He may want to ignore it, may want to act as though he has no idea about it. And most certainly, as best as I know of, Donald Trump has not had these allegations leveled against him in his buildings. But there is the record. And Donald Trump has not denied any of the support that he has gotten from these Nazi / KKK sympathizers. He has not denounced any of the support. In fact, he got a pretty nasty tweet a few weeks ago that showed Jeb Bush standing in front of one of his buildings in drab clothing as though he was downtrodden and a bum. And he called him, I believe, by the name of Bushevitz. kind of hammering him by alleging that he was Jewish and just saying some pretty nasty things about it, the Donald Trump retweeted it, thought it was funny. Jeb Bush was looking all drab and in front of one of his buildings and needed help, when it was actually a pretty nasty picture with the caption, "This is Donald Trump." My base opinion about Donald Trump is this, that he is in this election not to win. He just wants to run. I've never thought that he wanted to win. I was a little surprised he did not win Iowa the other night. That was a shocker. But even if he had won it, I still did not think he was going to win. And the reason he's not going to win is because there are not enough people in this country that when it comes down to November, and if there is an election between he and who I believe will win the Democratic nomination, Secretary Clinton, there are not enough people who will vote for him, that will vote for his exclusionary form of politics, where everything is about segregating people, name-calling people, and believing that somehow that is going to get the job done. Besides the fact, the man has made pronouncements about what he will do and has not made one specific charge how he will do it. He can't tell you how he's going to build a wall, other than the fact he says Mexico is going to pay it. He has no program because he can't explain to you what he's going to do. So he's just out there being a wonderful entertainer. In 2 or 3 years, we're going to see him on Apprentice, and the Apprentice is just going to go through the roof. That's Donald Trump. So we will keep an eye on him and see where it goes. Now, this new television show that's on, the O.J. Simpson trial. Now, I'll be honest with you. I did not see it last night, the first show, and I believe it's going to be on for a few weeks. I guess it's like a mini-series or whatever. John Travolta is Robert Shapiro. Courtney Vance is Johnny Cochran. And I haven't seen all the different other people who were the different actors. Faye Resnick is being played by the wife who is on Friday Night Lights. Connie Britton, who's also on the show Nashville, which I think is funny because Faye Resnick was light-skinned black, as I recall. But that's okay. You know, she's not. It's not like somebody's trying to portray Michael Jackson. So it's okay. And they're trying to recall what was then the trial of the century. Now, let me be clear about Faye Resnick. She's not half black, but she definitely had very tan skin. I think she was Spanish Italian. She wasn't black. So, Connie Britton, you're okay. It's no problem with being acting as Faye Resnick. Connie's a gorgeous woman. She'll do a great job, I'm sure, no doubt. Why was the O.J. Simpson trial so polarizing? Why was it? And trust me, for those of you who either weren't around then, or just if you were around then, you couldn't miss it. It was the news every day from the moment that the murder happened on a Sunday night in, was that April or May of 1994, until the trial verdict in September, October 1995. It was, the country was wrapped up in it. It was just an amazing, amazing thing. This guy who was the sports hero, who did movies, who ran through airports and commercials and hurdled the restraining gates, OJ. I mean, he was the darling up until that day in April 1994, when the murders were committed. And to be clear, he was found not guilty in the criminal trial. I would dare say he had very able lawyers who worked for him, who were able to muddy the waters. Now, I get it that there were a lot of people upset about how that trial progressed and what happened. I thought, as I think now, that the right person was on trial. You know, there's always been these conspiracy theories that it really wasn't OJ, it was his son. It was his son that committed the murders, or someone else. I think someone just came out about a month ago saying that they are the person that actually committed the murders. Pump the brakes. The right person was on trial, O.J. Simpson. Bottom line is, did he do it or not? Me? You guys want to ask me and pin me to the wall? I say more than likely he did, but it was not proven in court. And let me please say that over the history of this country, this wonderful country we live in, that there have been more times than not that people have been brought to trial, but once they get in front of a quote-unquote jury of their peers, have been found not guilty. And people are like, how could that be? How could that be? O.J. Simpson was not the first time someone was widely seen as the convicted murderer that turned out to not be convicted. So I understand people's anger at that moment, but unless you also had a sense of history in this country and how often that had happened before, on the flip side, where black people had been murdered, sometimes, and remember now, when people were lynched in the late 1800s and early 1900s, those people were never brought to trial. Lynchings were considered okay. Those were extrajudicial as anything that's ever been. Those weren't that wasn't a judge and the jury out there hanging people by their neck, cutting off their genitals and stuffing them in their mouths with little kids running around. I mean, these were literally picnics, lynchings were. There are photos where you will see children running around in the park while persons getting hung from the tree. What did he do? He whistle at a white woman? Did he steal an apple? Did he throw a brick through someone's window? And he was killed. And even if there was an allegation that he assaulted someone or possibly even murdered someone, there was no trial. There was no jury. This was just, let's go find him, put him up on the tree, hang him. Those people that did the hangings never came to trial. Never came to trial. The people that killed Emmett Till in 1955. Emmett Till is a very famous name in black history, American history. Look it up. Emmett Till. Emmett lived, I believe, in Chicago, somewhere in the north. Came down in the summertime to visit his relatives. And he made the fatal mistake of whistling at a white woman. And because he whistled at a white woman, they went after him and they hung him because he flirted with a white woman from Chicago visiting Mississippi. Those people were never, ever, ever brought to trial. I take that back. They were brought to trial, but they were not found guilty. They were not found guilty. So, and mind you, this is an all-white jury. All-white jury. But never found guilty. Someone did that to him. And the parents, the mother of Emmett Till, made sure that his casket was open so that people could see his face. That's what I thought about when people complained about the O.J. Simpson trial, and how could something like this happen? And Emmett Till is just one incident. There's so many others. But it was definitely a huge, huge phenomenon in 1994, 1995. And obviously, race was talked about, and obviously, injustices of the past were talked about, and it obviously, who actually committed this crime, why was it committed? OJ was formerly married to the woman, Nicole Brown Simpson, and the gentleman that was killed along with her evidently knew her, was friends with her, possibly dating, I don't know. They were both killed on the sidewalk right in front of the house. The house became a tourist attraction on Bundy Drive. It was a tourist attraction. The restaurant where the gentleman worked, Montaluna? I can't remember the name now. It was so infamous, famous at the time. Everything about that case, and obviously where OJ lived, where he supposedly dropped the knife behind the house underneath the air conditioner, and where Cato Kaelin heard the noise. Cato Kaelin, my goodness. Everything about that trial was remarkable, and the trial was on television every single day. So you constantly heard about OJ, OJ, OJ. So I don't know. Purient interest, I'll probably take a look at it, but nothing will be like what the actual trial was like. And Judge Ito and the detective who supposedly planted evidence, and Mark Furman. Oh, my goodness, it was something. And to try to go down near the courthouse, as I did once or twice at that time, that place was a madhouse. People outside selling T-shirts. It was a zoo outside. It was an absolute zoo. You couldn't even get close to there. It was, I don't want to make light of it because obviously two people lost their lives, but it was just an amazing spectacle. And, the TV show now, I guess it'll be interesting to watch a little, but I don't think anything can replace the actual trial, because there was nothing like watching the TV that day where Johnny Cochran actually put on the ski cap and he tried on the glove. And then he had OJ try on the glove. Oh, my goodness. And if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. Memories. Craziness. So, if you want to watch that TV show, that's, I believe it's on Fox or FX, give it a look. Remember back when, what were you doing then in 1994, 1995? I'll take a look at it because I just need to see how well these people can portray the people they're playing. John Travolta as Robert Shapiro, Courtney Vance as Johnny Cochran. It'll be interesting. We'll see. Voting. Why does voting matter? Why does voting on president matter, and other habits that we have to get into? You know, in 2008, so many new people who maybe were eligible to vote in 2004 or 2000, young people, let's say you became 18 in 2000 and now you were, 26, 27 in 2008. You didn't really, weren't interested much in politics, but, maybe you voted on the president. But if you did vote for president, that's the only thing you voted for, and you only voted once every 4 years. A lot of people became introduced to the political process and voting in 2008. We got a lot more people who were interested. Then what happened? And they elected President Barack Obama. In 2010, people lost interest. They went back to their old habits. And we had this new phenomenon called the Tea Party group come in, a group of Republicans who were against the president at every single turn and wanted to bring fiscal responsibility back country. Mind you, these people, a lot of, were either in office or in public life, shut their mouth during the Bush era. And let's all recall, the financial downturn started on George W. Bush's watch. President Obama did not create the financial disaster in 2008. That was President George Bush and some of his policies. And you could actually even say that some of the legislation passed by President Clinton in the late 1990s helped exacerbate it, letting banks now get involved in selling financial securities. Instead of just being a bank, taking your money, putting it in deposits, investing in real estate, doing the very conservative thing the banks used to do, they allowed banks to open themselves up to securities and selling stocks and bonds and getting into the market, so to speak. And that is what created the issues that we had when they started taking mortgages, which were normally safe investments, and started selling people homes with speculative mortgages that for maybe 2 or 3 years they'd get a decent rate, but then that hit would come after 3 years, which was 2007, 2008, and they got banged. All those mortgages got packaged into securities, something that you could invest in. And I say invest with quotes. They were bad investments because they were bad mortgages. And people lost their shirts on those mortgages. And that's a primary reason for the crash. There's a movie out now. I think it's even been nominated for Best Picture, The Big Short, that specifically talks about what happened during 2007, 2008, how that all came about. It's a very good movie because it really goes into detail. It's kind of they kind of go off, break the fourth wall and kind of look at you right in the camera and explain to you what these things are, all the different investment vehicles and how they did mortgages. And they kind of break that fourth wall, talk to you as a viewer of the film. And so you get a real good understanding of what it's all about. I think it's a very good film, The Big Short. But that's what happened in 2008. In 2010, the Tea Party came in complaining about how bad the economy had gotten. They wanted to pin it on the President Obama, but like I said, this was happened well before him. And not as and the thing about 2010 versus 2008 is not as many people voted. The people that voted in 2008 did not come back in 2010. And that caused the Republicans, who always like less people voting, because their voters who are older, over 50, predominantly white, they are people who vote every single time. School bond issues in March in an off year, or every 2 years for the Congress and the Senate, and then that every fourth year for president, they vote every single time. They're dependable. But the new people primarily that came out to vote, and Democrats in general for decades, tend to not vote on that fourth year for president. And that has gotten the Democratic Party in trouble. So voting on the president matters. Why does it matter? The president gets to vote. The president gets to select Supreme Court justices. And when you think about some of the monumental Supreme Court decisions that have been made, we can just go back the last 2 years. The Affordable Care Act, the Supreme Court voted on that. One more vote, conservative vote, and they would have, there would be no health care. There would be no Obamacare right now. Marriage equality, another 5-4 vote. You know, if George W. Bush had had another one of the liberal justices come off in between 2001 and 2008, there would have been another vote that would have denied marriage equality. And then going back over the years, Brown v. Board of Education, Roe v. Wade, different civil rights votes on the court. And then, obviously, in 2010, the Citizens United, the one that changed all of the rights to let people like the Koch brothers put as much money as they want into politics. And I am going to talk about them in the next few days. There's some information that I couldn't find that I know is out there. And as soon as I find it, I'll bring it and we'll discuss it. Citizens United in 2010, a huge Supreme Court decision that changed the way we finance our political races. So that's one reason why the president matters. And obviously, you can tell the different decisions that a president has to make in terms of foreign policy, in terms of use of military, our economic votes. You would hope that a president has some say in that. But what really matters, and I'm not downplaying voting on president, but people have to start understanding that every 2 years, we vote on your congressman. My congressman is Representative Adam Schiff, someone I've met several times. Good man. I met him when he was a state representative in California back in the late 90s. Great guy. And at that time, he was a big brother of a kid who's now in his 30s. At that time, that kid was going into Harvard. It pulled him literally off the streets. He was a foster child. And Adam took him in his home. And Adam Schiff is a good man. He's a really good man. He concentrates a lot on national security affairs in Washington. But these are the people that you vote on every 2 years. And you need to find out who your congressman is in your area. And too often, people are not voting on these people. Too often, especially now, especially in 2010, when the Tea Party came in power, it changed our politics until the year 2020. And why do I say that? Everyone, I think, is aware of the thing we have every 10 years called the census. We do the big count. How many people are in this country? You get the form. You have to let them know, I live with three people, and we are African-American, or we are Hispanic, and more white than Hispanic, and Asian Islander, Hawaiian, whatever. They do that count every 10 years on the zero, so 2000, 2010, 2020, 2030, 1960, 1970, 1980. And then that count determines not only how many people are in this country, there's a lot of statistics that go along with it. How many TVs are bought, how many refrigerators, how many cars are in the country. But more importantly, how many congressional seats each state has. Because as states every 10 years gain or lose population, a state like California may go from having 43 representatives to 48 representatives because they gained population. Or a state may go from having 5 representatives to having 4 representatives. Now, when that happens, you have to change the congressional districts, those Pablo Picasso drawings where states are drawn to each congressional district. Who makes those decisions to draw those districts to make them look like they do? Because sometimes they look like salamanders or snakes. They're cut all different ways. And you're like, why don't they just kind of cut it almost, you don't have to do it pie shape, but, you know, you got a state and you just kind of portion it off. Why does it have to look so abstract? The reason it looks abstract is because every 10 years, once that count is taken, and then the apportionment happens. Okay, you, instead of having 45, you have now 48. Whatever state legislature is in power, whoever has a majority in every state, Missouri, Arkansas, Texas, California, Alaska, each state legislature, after that count is made on that 2010 date, gets to decide how the state's congressional districts get settled. Now, let's say a state come 2020 had 25 congressional districts. After the count, they still have 25 congressional districts. If in 2010 that state was run by Republicans and they carved up those districts a certain way, in 2020, after that election, when I hope Secretary Clinton is gets a second term as president, and that particular state's legislature turns to Democrat, now they get to choose how those 45 or 25 congressional districts are apportioned. They get to literally draw the map differently. And what happens is, if it's a Republican, they're going to try to carve out more Republican districts. So that's why sometimes these districts look like snakes. They are literally carving out block by block, house by house, what they know to be Republican households, Republican neighborhoods. They want them all together so that those people will vote for a Republican congressperson. What they also do is they tend to put Hispanics or black people or majority Democrats in the district altogether to segregate them. They don't want to mix it all together, because mixing it all together means you would get, instead of having a 70-30 Republican-Democrat balance, you'd have 55-45. That's too close for most politicians in Washington, because then they may get voted out of office. And the way the Republicans have it now, because of what happened in 2010 with the Tea Party vote, not only did the Congress switch over from Democrat to Republican, but a lot of states' legislatures, this Tea Party swept not only through the federal government, but through state governments and state legislatures and governors. A lot of governors changed hands in 2010-2011, state legislatures 2010-2011. So when it came time to carve up the legislative districts, Republicans made those choices. One of the negative things that has been said about President Obama, and I don't know if you can attribute it all to him, but over the course of his administration, he has lost over 900 formerly Democratic seats that have switched over to Republican, all through the state legislatures, governorships, Congress, 900 people. That's a big, big switch. And that switch is what changes the congressional districts, what they call gerrymandering, carving up the districts so that a state that had, once upon a time, 25 total congressional districts, and let's say 18 of them were Democrat and 7 of them were Republican. A very astute gerrymanderer who happens to be Republican can cut that same mix up and make it, instead of 18-7, can make it 19-6, the opposite direction, just by carving up the districts. And like I said, these districts look like Pablo Picasso abstract drawings. You know, they could go from one end of a state to another, snaking all the way through the state, and that's one congressional district. Then you carve out another that looks like a octopus, you know, tentacles this way, tentacles that way. It's one congressional district. Literally, the person across the street from you will be in a different congressional district. But then two blocks farther away from you, that person's in your district. And it's all about who comes out to vote. And if we don't get the people to come out to vote, these are the types of things that happen. So that's why I've been saying since 2012, once the impact of what happened in 2010 became apparent in terms of redistricting, that the next big election is not 2012, 2014, 2016, it's 2020 and 2021 and into the states. Because sometimes states vote for their governors and their state legislatures not on the same year that presidents are voted on. And if people are concerned about how we handle things in Washington, why aren't there more legislation for jobs? You know, we got these bridges falling and all this infrastructure that needs to be fixed. You know, I just had a family member who got flooded out of their house, literally. The sewers just got overflowed. Infrastructure, streets, roads, bridges, pipes, water pipes, Flint, Michigan, Sebring, Ohio. This is all about who we have in office that makes these decisions. Flint, Michigan is going on because we have a governor that decided that the city of Flint could not make decisions for themselves, that they needed a person appointed by the governor. Forget who you voted on for mayor. They can't run anything. They're not the person in charge. I'm putting the person in charge myself because you all have done such a bad job. And again, I think I mentioned this on Monday. We're not patting the mayors, former mayors of cities in Michigan. We're not always saying that they did the greatest job. Former mayors of Detroit, former mayors of Flint. But this whole idea of having a receivership where this one person gets to say, you know what, no, this costs $2. No, we're going to do it. We're going to do something that only costs 75 cents. That's how you get poisoned water, lead contaminated water. You go on the cheap. Vote, people. We have to vote. And I say that as someone who has since 2002, and we'll do it again this year in 2016, has worked at the voting booth. I'm what's called an inspector. So I make sure that everyone that comes in that wants to vote, that their name is on the voting rolls, that they are an active voter. If they're an inactive voter, they literally have to take an oath to introduce themselves into voting, and they can vote right there on the spot. If their name isn't on the roll, but they say, yes, I have been a voter, please, I've been voting here the last 20 years. I don't know what happened. We can give them a provisional ballot in California, and that goes into a pink envelope. And then what happens is you put it into the box, the ballot box, but it has to get counted separately. And the people at the election division have to make sure, the registrar's office has to make sure that this person is actually on the voting rolls. If they're not, their vote doesn't count. If they do, it counts. We give that person a phone number, tell them in 30 days you can call, check, make sure you're actually on the voting rolls, that your vote counted. I've done it every 2 years since 2002. So that's the primary and the general election. In the primary, you get to vote your party, whatever party you declared when you first registered to vote. And then in the general election, you pick the person you best think can run the particular job that you're voting for. I like doing it. I take a day off from work to do it. Most jobs in this country allow people to at least vote, if not not take the day. That day is a day that starts about 6 in the morning and doesn't end till about 9:30 at night once I get everything turned in. But two times every 2 years, it's worth it. So this will be, 8, 10, 5, 12, 14, 16, 8. This will be my 15th and 16th time doing it this year. And I enjoy doing it because it's part of the civic process. I enjoy doing it so much. And I didn't realize this until right after we closed the polls in 2012. I literally have been fortunate enough to work in my own voting precinct. So where I'm working as an inspector is actually where I vote. So I've been lucky enough to be able to do that the last 4 years. In 2012, on the reelection for President Obama, I literally forgot to vote that day. It's the first time I have not voted in a presidential election. I am making this announcement. I have not told anybody until today. I literally just being busy and I was doing stuff, and then 8 o'clock, the polls closed. As I'm getting all the ballots together, I realized I forgot to vote. I couldn't believe it. That once I knew that he had won, I felt a little bit better. But and I still have the stub of voting. That is people support, not just here. Every neighborhood. It's, you know, a certain teacher that's doing certain things in the school. We all are involved. We all have things to do. You know, work there. And like it's really important. So I would just say, you know, do the best you can. Get out there and get it done. And the last thing I wanted to, again, I'll talk about it all week because it is the big game of this weekend is the Super Bowl, and they're doing a lot of – the NFL has just gotten so commercial these last 10, 15 years. I love the game, played it for a long time, but doggone it. Now they have a whole big thing. It just started this year that normally Tuesday of Super Bowl week is the day that get the players out on the field where they're going to be playing, and – everyone has these booths, and the players get up there, and they sit on a little table, and they get interviewed by throngs of people. And every single question, you got people dressing up like it's Halloween, and, you know, people, the interviewers are trying to make a name for themselves, besides the football players being interviewed. Well, this year, they changed it into a whole thing on Monday night, and people got, the prominent players on each team got introduced to a crowd, and they had Aloe Black as one of the musical artists. It was a whole just extravaganza. Okay, whatever. Anything for another program, another. And now, you know, the NFL plays on Sundays. They play on Mondays. So at the end of the season, they play a few games on Saturday, and now they have Thursday night. If they take one more day out of the week, I'm done. If they start playing on Tuesdays or Wednesdays or Fridays, I'm done with the NFL, because at some point you can't keep expanding. Can you have a Starbucks on every corner? Now, let me think about that. Actually, you probably can. But, you know, the NFL has a franchise on what they do, and they're going for it. So we'll see. We'll see. Cam, like I said earlier, he's just getting hammered on making that statement he made last week about being an African-American quarterback. And because he made that statement in an interview where he was asked about what you think is important, and he brought that term up himself, I had no problem with it. But you knew that reporters were then going to take it like catnip and dissect it. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, say it again. We want you to say it again. Say it, you're African American again. Come on, please say it again. They want him. They want him to say it again, because then they'll feel good. Because they have to be able to write, oh, I was asking him a question and he said African American quarterback. He's making himself African American. Why is he separating himself from? You did it right the first time, but now that you're going to have to answer it 10,000 times this week, let's see if it has an impact on him on Sunday. After you answer so many questions all week long about the same thing, and, you know, so far it looks like he hasn't lost his cool. He's tried to, you know, take it and answer. But after a while, does it distract you from what you really have to do? You're there to play a game on Sunday, and hopefully he will be able to play the sport that he loves and play it at the high level he's played it all season. Well, that wraps up the show today, and I've renamed it Lewis Kincaid at the Runaround, or Lewis Kincaid with the Runaround, because I am running around a lot of subjects, but I'm really trying to get in depth into them also and trying to talk about them, not just what's going on, but if they have an angle on them. It just so happens that some of the topics I've had the last 2 days have had race involved in it, or culture as it relates to Cam Newton and being an African American quarterback and discussing that. But the why, you know, Fox News, why do black people vote Democrat? The O.J. Simpson issue, why does Black Lives Matter? Some of the, you know, Al Sharpton, why does he incite so much anger amongst certain people? They have race as a backdrop. And I can discuss that. Someone else can discuss that who happens to be white. And we can discuss it and even maybe not agree on it. It doesn't mean either one of us is racist. It's just we're having the discussion about race. And we can't dismiss it. You know, this country was started on, you know, all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with unalienable rights, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. The people that wrote that then went home after they signed that Declaration of Independence and went home to their plantations. We can't erase that. It's there. So, and all the history since that time. Now we're in 2016, a lot different than it was in 1956, but here we are. And when we still in some ways struggle with it. So I will be back tomorrow at noon, and we'll talk about the Oscars and some of my favorite films. I'm going to go through the list of films and this whole issue about Oscars and why are they so white. That's another issue with race involved. I don't think this year there's a huge issue in terms of why certain films didn't or did get nominated, but there's a bigger picture than just the Oscars, and it's about day-to-day Hollywood and how people are hired. I'm going to talk about some of the things that have occurred in Hollywood over the years. Thanks for listening. I see that my list of people who listened today has gone up. Overall, my listeners on all my shows back through 2011 has grown over to 25,000 individual listeners. So I appreciate that, and we'll continue to help make this show better. And I like doing it. So, and at some point, it'll probably be starting next week, as now we're in February, we'll start talking about my baseball team, St. Louis Cardinals, and what's happened in the last year and where they're going to be this next year. I'm a huge, huge baseball fan. So we will be talking about that as football goes away. It turns into baseball and basketball. And yes, if you can handle it, a little hockey too. I can do that too. I'm multifaceted and ambidextrous. Have a good day. Goodbye.